Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet a World War II veteran who led the way for today's women in the military, and we'll get the latest from our friends at the Marine Corps League. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
40 years ago, the United States and Norwegian troop exchange program began with a simple handshake between two generals, one American and one Norwegian. This month, about 100 Norwegian soldiers and 100 Minnesota Army and Air National Guard members will exchange training locations. The exchange began in 1974 and is the longest-running military exchange partnership between any two nations. The yearly exchange promotes goodwill and sharpens military readiness between the nations. It also provides opportunities for cultural understanding among its participants. While in Minnesota, the Norwegian soldiers will visit and train at Camp Ripley. They will tour the Air National Guard base in Duluth and spend a day in St. Paul, touring our capital and the Veterans Service Building. The Norwegians will stay with Minnesota families and get the opportunity to experience some of our local culture. While in Norway, the Minnesota National Guard soldiers and airmen will conduct winter operations training with the Norwegian Home Guard. They will participate in a field training exercise where they will ski in the mountains and sleep in tents and snow shelters. They will also conduct weapons familiarization with their Norwegian trainers. The soldiers and airmen are looking forward to a buddy weekend where they will stay with a Norwegian family and experience some of their culture. This is a unique exchange. It's more than training. It's a cultural exchange. We've enjoyed the first 40 years and look forward to the future of this United States and Norwegian troop exchange program. Thank you for listening. Today's veterans are talented, team-oriented, and technologically savvy. Help good business get better by hiring today's veterans.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now to talk about her career in the military during World War II is Ann Kornstrom. Ann, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Ann, you're a transplant to Minnesota.
That's right.
Where were you born? Where did you start?
I was born and grew up in Vermont.
And how in the world did you get to Minnesota?
I married a Swede.
And followed him home.
I came home with him, yep.
Ann, I understand you graduated from high school and then went to college.
I graduated from the University of Vermont in May of 1941, shortly after Pearl Harbor. Another friend, another girl and myself, didn't know what we were going to do. We thought we were going back to school, and we weren't sure. So we took stopgap jobs for the summer. And early in the fall, we heard a radio ad for the Women's Army Corps. We thought that sounded like something we might have a good time with, so we enlisted, both of us. And we were in Baltimore, Maryland at the time, and I had went to basic in Daytona Beach, which had just opened, just barely opened. It was being run by the men. They didn't have any women down there yet who didn't know why we were there for sure or anything. After basic, went to Fort Des Moines to get shots and outfitted, and then to Denver, Lowry Field to Aerial Photography School.
Diane, I want to back up for just a minute. When you signed up for the Women's Army Corps, it was actually the Women's Auxiliary Army Corps, wasn't it?
Army Auxiliary Corps, right.
Can you explain to me what the difference?
It was not part of the military. Congress didn't want us in there, really, I guess. They didn't understand that part. And it was, I think it was about a year later that they finally decided we could stay and we would be part of the military. So they took the auxiliary out and we had to reenlist. We went through reenlistment again, so that anybody that wanted to get out could do it then.
So in 1943, auxiliary was dropped, mm-hmm. and it became simply the Women's Army Corps.
Yeah. Women's Army Corps.
Okay, but they were, even though it was auxiliary when you decided to enlist the first time, they wanted the ladies in the Women's Auxiliary Army Corps, didn't they?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
And for what purpose? What jobs, what were they trying to accomplish?
To to relieve men, send them out to war and various jobs. So we had no idea what we were going to be doing.
So they wanted the women to sign up for the Women's Auxiliary Army Corps to do every job they could to free up the men so they could go fight.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's a pretty good description.
Okay. And then you said you went to training to become part of the aerial photography school.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about that?
It was very interesting. I can't remember now how many months the original course was, but in those days they were jamming everything up. They were shortening everything up because they needed help so badly. We were not in very good shape when the world started as far as troops went. So we did it in a shorter time. They cut it about in half. And I don't remember just how many months it was. It's the first time I went west of the Mississippi was when I was on my way to Lowry Field. That was very exciting.
I understand you were part of the first 50 women in uniform west of the Mississippi.
West of the Mississippi. Nobody had ever seen them before. The guys on the bases hadn't seen them. The civilians hadn't seen them. It was kind of interesting.
You didn't scare them, did you?
I don't know.
I'll bet not.
Probably not. They were very, very careful with us. They wouldn't let us take a drink in public. We couldn't. Of course, we were working so hard, we didn't have a chance to get in public anyway. But they were very careful how we acted. Very, very careful because of the reputation. You see a woman in uniform doing something she shouldn't be doing, and all women in uniform are doing something they shouldn't be doing, right? Reputation follows that.
And I imagine they'd have had a tougher time dropping the auxiliary and making it actually part of the military.
That too. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So you speeded up the school and did it twice as fast. What did you learn in school? You said aerial photography. What was the importance of that?
It was very important. Partly for the mapping purposes, partly so our planes would know where they were going, even. If they were bombing something, they had to know where they were going. They had to know how to get there. And there was a lot of technical stuff that we got, of course. It was interesting, but it was difficult. Several of the women washed out because of that. I had just graduated from college, so I was a step up already when it came to studying anything. And we graduated, and they sent us out in small groups to take over photo labs all over the country. I went to Washington, D.C., Bowling Field, which they did mostly archival stuff, but they had a very active lab. They sent five of us there, put us in each of five departments in the lab. The guy in charge of that department trained us, then they left, and then they sent a bunch of women in for us to train. And we ran the labs from then on.
So were you developing the photos?
We did everything, yeah. There's a lot of developing and printing and whatever you do with a photograph.
And then did you sort them out and read them? What did you do with them once you
didn't do the interpretation.
You didn't do that?
We got them ready. Mm-hmm.
So the photos came from missions and from aircraft that were flying?
Right. And they'd bring them in on airplanes in the great big metal, they're on metal spools in the big metal cans. One day they got a bunch in that were all jammed up in the middle, and they locked a couple of us up in a dark room and so we could open them because they couldn't get them open.
Did you get it done?
Yes, with a pair of scissors.
Oh, my goodness.
We did. So it was, they were doing a lot. They were just getting going with the aerial photography. They had a long way to go with it.
And so how long were you in D.C.?
About a year and a half.
And then you shipped off to where?
Then I went to England.
All right. And we're going to have to take a short break. Okay. When we come back, I want to talk about England and some of the things you did over there. And we're speaking with Ann Kornstrom about her experience in World War II on Minnesota Military Radio. We're going to have to take a short break. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Fellow veterans and supporters, this is Lee Alfords, Department Commander of Minnesota Veterans of Foreign Wars, inviting you to join us for Memorial Day Ride for Healing. Proceeds will support the National Vietnam Veteran Memorial Education Center. For more information, visit rideforhealing.com.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I've been joined today by Ann Kornstrom, and we've been talking about her military service during World War II. Initially in the Women's Auxiliary Army Corps, which was they dropped the auxiliary from and became the Women's Army Corps in 1943. She was from Vermont, went to school, went to aerial photography school, out to Washington, D.C., processing all kinds of photos for the military. And then, Ann, you said after a year and a half in D.C., you got new orders. And where did you go?
England. We were the 8th Air Force headquarters, about 35 miles from London.
And I'm curious, did you go over there on a boat?
We certainly did.
How long did that take?
8 days.
8 days on a boat.
8 days, one shower.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the guys probably didn't even get one shower.
They all did. and hundreds of men and 50 of us.
How was that?
It was fine. We were in one section that closed off, and on each end of the section, there was a sign above the door that said mental ward.
I bet they had armed guards, too.
I was one of them. Me and some guy, and we went on each end of the mental ward. The guys were all so sick, they could have cared less.
From the voyage?
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. Well, when you got to England, then where were you stationed?
8th Air Force headquarters in High Wycombe, about 35 miles from London.
And were you all part of the photography labs, or were the ladies stationed all over England? The ones on the board.
They were pretty much in whatever jobs there were. Radio on the base, they had a huge radio underground. Women were working that. They were doing a lot of the jobs the men did.
So you were assigned once again to the aerial photography.
Right.
And now this was just before or just after the invasion?
Just before. A few months before.
So you were getting ready to helping map out some of those things and process all the photos?
Certainly were.
And then what happened after D-Day? Got a lot busier, I'll bet.
We were very busy. Patton was running wild in Europe and didn't have any maps to show him where he was going. We had to try and keep ahead of him, fly over and fly him back and get him made and send him back to him, and it was really hard. We were working double shifts at that time.
And he wasn't waiting for your photographs, was he?
He didn't care what we were doing. He was moving as fast as he could move.
But the generals he reported to wanted to know where he was going, so I'm sure they looked at all the photos.
I'm sure they did.
So how many shifts did you have in the photo lab?
Three.
Three shifts? So it was running around the clock?
Around the clock. It was always around the clock.
And when there were big battles, it was going even faster?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. How many photos do you think you processed?
We processed overall over 25 million.
25 million photos,
mm-hmm,
in a period of how long were you there, a year or 2 years?
Year and a half or so.
You were there till it was over, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
It's a difference about a world war. It's a little different than what people know today. If they go on a deployment, it might be for a year. But in World War II, when you went to war, you stayed until it was done.
Until it was done.
Whole different attitude, isn't it?
Everything's different, yeah. It is a different attitude.
So how were the living conditions in England?
They were pretty good. England's pretty cold. We lived in Quonset huts with a little coal stove in the middle of the room with about 20 girls in it. No, not 20, maybe 15. And we had to keep the coal stove going, and our mattresses were in three pieces. They felt as though they were stuffed with corn stalks, but I don't think they were.
Real comfortable, huh?
Right, because every time you turned over, one of the pieces moved.
Oh, no.
But we were young then, for heaven's sakes. Things like that didn't bother us
How was the chow?
Not too bad. It was all right.
It was okay. You got through it.
Oh, yeah.
So here you are, a young lady from Vermont,
mm-hmm,
joined the Women's Army Corps, mm-hmm, went to school to learn how to process photography, went to D.C., over to England, and while you were there, you found a husband.
I did.
That's kind of a long way to go to find a husband, isn't it?
Well, you take them where you get them. You get them when you, yeah. You take them where you find them.
Take them where you find them.
Excuse me for that.
And he was born where?
Minneapolis.
So he was from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So he went all the way from Vermont to England to find a guy from Minnesota.
Absolutely.
And you were so busy working over there, where'd you find time to meet this guy?
I was working with him. That's a pretty good deal.
So where the opportunities come up,
why not?
He must have been a fine man.
He was.
and you decided to keep him. So that's a good thing.
We were married just, we knew the war was ending. We could tell by the pictures, and everybody knew it anyway. And he was going to be going directly to Japan because we were going to invade Japan. They were taking all of the men except the ones they needed over there because they had a lot of them over there they didn't need. They were all going to Japan for the invasion. The cooks and all of them had rifles.
So did he work in the photo lab as well?
He did, yeah.
So they
were all going too.
So they sent him off to Japan.
Well, he was going to go. And so he decided if we didn't know where I was going. I wound up in Germany. So we decided to get married before we got separated.
Did you come back to Minnesota then?
I went to Germany for a while. They sent us over there.
Okay.
Well, they couldn't get everybody home at once. There were millions of us over there.
I'm sure.
So they were having to find places to put people and do things until they had room enough to bring them home. And I came home before he did. And when I came home, I had just arrived in the States when the atom bomb fell. So he came home instead of invading Japan.
So back to Minnesota.
Back to Minnesota.
Or to Minnesota for you.
Back to, yeah.
Now, before we leave England in that whole discussion, these 25 million photos, they were really important, weren't they?
Desperately.
Can you explain that to our listeners?
Well, when you're in England and your airplanes are leaving from England and you're trying to bomb someplace in Germany or wherever they were bombing, you have to know where you're going. And if you don't know where you're going, you have to find a way to do it. So you'll fly over and take pictures and make pictures and make maps so you can know where you're going. The planes that took the pictures, they had fighter planes, P-35s for one. They had no weapons. They took out all of the weaponry. They had nothing but speed. They took out the steel behind the pilot's seat, even everything they could get off, because that's all they had was speed. And they'd fly over and take the pictures, fly them back.
So go as fast as they could, take the pictures, get them back to you, process mm-hmm. them, make the maps, mm-hmm. find out how the bombing runs were going, mm-hmm. all and catch up with General Patton.
If we could, I don't.
Never quite caught him, did you?
Well, I don't know whether we did or not. And then, of course, we'd get the bomb damage pictures and the whatever had happened in the flights.
So, Ann, this when you joined the military, it really changed your life. Did you ever have second thoughts about that?
Oh, in every way you can think of.
Mm-hmm. Any second thoughts, or was it a good thing?
It was a good thing.
Even though you ended up in Minnesota for many years?
That wasn't too bad either. It was a good thing. It was something that I always liked it. I was always glad I was in. In those days, it was so different from what, you know, we were so new and all of that.
And once again, it was World War and everybody was involved and you did what you had
everybody
to do.
Everybody was. My brother was.
And one last question. You really were part of the generation that opened the door for women in the military today.
Absolutely.
And as you know, that they've opened up all the jobs in the military, or they're in the process of doing that.
Absolutely.
For women. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about that? Is it good, bad, or just another development?
Another development. I'm not sure how good it is, but it's another development.
Okay.
I have nothing much more to say about that. They've been doing it all along.
And any final thoughts about your time in the military?
I never regretted going in. Never.
What would you say to the young ladies today thinking about a career in the military?
I don't know. To me, it sounds as though it's a good thing to do.
And it certainly sounds like it was good for you.
It was. Aside from the fact that I wound up with a husband, it was good in a lot of ways.
And a husband from Minnesota, too.
And a husband from Minnesota.
We've converted you from Vermont to Minnesotan.
Pretty much.
Ann, I'd like to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Welcome.
That was Ann Quenstrom about her career in World War II in the military on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Friends, this is Don Pancake, commander of the Minnesota American Legion. As we continue our mission to train school patrols across the state, we encourage you to make a difference. Please visit legionville.org. That's legionville.org.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to get the latest from our friends at the Marine Corps League. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
President's Day, also known as Washington's Birthday, is a United States federal holiday that is celebrated each year in honor of President George Washington, our nation's first president. Tomorrow, we will celebrate this holiday and honor the outstanding accomplishments of the man known as the father of his country. Virtually every American knows he was the first president, but many Americans know little about his time as commander-in-chief of the Continental Army during the Revolutionary War. General George Washington was a compassionate military leader whose courage and determination inspired his troops. His refusal to give up or quit made the difference between victory and defeat on more than one occasion. General Washington was devoted to the well-being of his soldiers and created the first military badge of merit for the common soldier. The military badge of merit was revived in 1932 and called the Purple Heart Medal. This medal bears Washington's image and is awarded to members of the Armed Forces of the United States who were wounded or killed by an enemy during the line of duty. Tomorrow we pay tribute to the brave and audacious Commander-in-Chief, George Washington. And as with Memorial Day and Veterans Day, President's Day allows us another opportunity to honor our country's veterans.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Mel Roiger, Commandant of the Marine Corps League Department of Minnesota. Mel, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
You're quite welcome.
Mel, can you tell us, when were you in the Marines?
From 1952 to 1955 in Korea.
And so you went over there and settled that war for us.
Well, we got it to a DMZ. I don't know if we settled it or not.
Well, as good as we could.
Yeah.
And you were in country? Where did you serve then?
Well, I was at a railhead called Moonsunny when we were over there. And when they sent us back to rest area, if we had to go out again, we went to a place called Able Block. And Able Block is a huge mountain that you had to climb. And I was in 81 mortars, so we aren't like the Army. They come in jeeps. We had to carry them babies, the tube, the ammo, and everything up this mountain. In the heat of summer, July and August, and it was hot. It was as hot as it was cold in the winter. And it took us time to get up there, but we made it.
Well, we had a few of your counterparts, a few Marines in here a couple of months ago that were part of the Chozon Reservoir battle, and they said that was particularly brutal and just as cold as you can dream of.
Yep, it was.
And we learned when it's colder than 10 below, you shouldn't try to fire a bazooka.
Yeah.
Didn't work very well.
No.
Well, thank God for the Marines. That was a tough one, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, it was tough.
And, well, now you're the Commandant of the Marine Corps League Department of Minnesota. Can you tell us what does this Veteran Service Organization do?
Well, this organization is comprised of all former Marines and FMF corpsmen. They can also belong to our league, but they got to belong to the FMF, Fleet Marines.
Fleet Marines, okay.
And we have programs like Scouts, Toys for Tots, Marines Helping Marines, just about anything you can think about.
And in Minnesota, the Marine Corps League has, you call them detachments?
Yeah, they're detachments. We have 13 of them. Well, we'll have 14 now. And I just was talking to one of the gentlemen up at Duluth. They want to start a detachment up there. So we're sending information up there. And somewhere along the line, God forbid, I don't know where I got it from, but somebody in Worthington, Minnesota wants to start the detachment. And I, for the life of me, can't find the guy that told me it. So I don't know who to get in touch with.
All you Marines down in Worthington, get a hold of Mel.
Yeah, right.
So for information on the Marine Corps League, is there a website? Or where do they go for information?
Oh, yeah, they can go on the website. There's the Marine Corps website. There's a state website, detachment website, and a national website.
And do you know the address of your
state? No, I don't.
Must be Marine Corps League. They can
Something.
Google that. We'll find a link to that website and put it up on Minnesota Military Radio's Facebook site.
Sure.
So if any of your Marines out there want to join the Marine Corps League, we'll have that information available. Now, Mel, how many members do you have across the state?
I would say we're probably be talking 600-700 right now.
And if somebody wants to form a new detachment, do they have to have 10? How many do they need?
They should have about 15.
15 or so?
Yep.
And then if they want to start a new detachment, then I suppose you have to go to work and go down there and show them how to do all of this.
Well, yes. Once they get their starter packets, I have to call National and get a starter packet, and it's got to be sent down. They've got to get their officers together. They've got to get a checking account put together. And I mean, it's quite a fiasco to get it going.
We're speaking with Mel Reuger, Commandant of the Marine Corps League, Department of Minnesota, on Minnesota Military Radio. Mel, what do your detachments do? Why would a Marine Corps veteran want to join? Why would they want to start a new detachment? What do you do?
Well, we have military funerals. All former Marines that have dressed blues can wear them for special occasions, like funerals. And
so you provide an honor guard then?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And then we have our own uniform, Marine Corps League uniform, which is a white shirt, blue pants with the blood stripe, and our battle ribbons on the left, of course. That's the Marine Corps League uniform that we have to wear if we go somewhere formal. And we also have a red blazer that we wear for special functions like banquets and stuff.
So your primary focus is Marines helping Marines?
Right. We get that done. If somebody needs help, we'll do what we can for them monetarily if we can, or they got to get a hold of us and we have to see what we can do by detachments or by the state. It all depends on what the situation is.
Maybe help get them over to the county veteran service officer so
yes.
they can, because they've got all the resources, don't they?
Oh, yes, they do.
Now, is the Marine Corps League in every state?
Just about.
I mean, we might have one or two states where the Marines haven't gotten organized yet, Mel?
No. They I'm sure they've got them in just about every state because we go to conventions all over.
And I understand that you're the Marine Corps League Department Commandant, but you take your orders from the Commandant of the Marine Corps and from the National Commandant of the Marine Corps League.
That is correct. They send down directives on how we can wear and what we can't, and so we got to follow just like they would be in the Marine Corps. We have to follow their directions.
So as Minnesota's Commandant, you feel like you're back in the service, Mel? Getting orders from the Commandant of the Marine Corps?
Yeah, but it's not so bad.
Not so bad. You like it?
Oh, yes. Matter of fact, I like the Marine Corps. I was always spit and polish, so it never bothered me. I was always squared away. I'd have stayed in if I could have, but I was married and had a son, and they wouldn't let me stay in. Hardship to the government.
But once a Marine, always a Marine.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
That's more true than any other service, isn't
it? Yep.
Why is that, Mel?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's because of the camaraderie you form as with the guys you're with and all over the country that you're with. It seems like if somebody knows you're a Marine, they'll yell out, Semper Fi, you turn around and say, you betcha. And I mean, they always talk to you.
You wouldn't say anything naughtier than that, though, would you?
No.
Okay, well, What other type of things do your detachments do? Do they get involved in some charitable fundraising, some of those things?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Our detachment in Mankato, the first of the month, we have a hamburger fry up there, and we just load the place up, our VFW. And then we also, if people need something like Minnesota Nice, I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but that's an organization that makes up packages and sends them overseas to the troops. Well, we give them our profits at one Friday night. They made about, I don't know, $600, I think.
So you help pay for the postage for the yeah, packages to go
right,
to the troops.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's a fine thing to do, isn't it?
Yep, you betcha.
Did you get many packages in Korea?
No.
I can remember getting one or two in Vietnam, and it was fun when they came.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't get them in Korea. I got a package when I was at Camp Matthews in the rifle range. We had just got finished with Thanksgiving dinner, and I got called to the duty hut. My mother, bless her soul, she's dead now. She sent me a box with 3 canisters of peanuts. And that DI made me duck walk in front of him and eat that small can of peanuts after I just had a turkey dinner.
The fun times in the Marine Corps.
Needless to say, I wrote my mother and said, don't send me nothing.
And she listened.
Yes.
Well, we have to take a short break. We're speaking with Mel Royger, Commandant of the Marine Corps League, Department of Minnesota, on Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back with more from the Marine Corps League. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I've been joined today by Mel Royger, Commandant of the Marine Corps League, Department of Minnesota. Mel, we've been talking about your career in the Marines and all the detachments in Minnesota, but the Marine Corps League is also part of the Commander's Task Force. Can you tell us about that?
Well, the Commander's Task Force is comprised of mostly all the commanders of different organizations, and it's more or less an information committee that we pass information on to each other, and we try to lobby a little bit for things that we think we should have for the veterans and stuff up at Washington.
So it's a Minnesota State Commander's Task Force, and it's the leaders of each of the 9 veteran service organizations in the state, VFW, American Legion, Marine Corps League, and so forth.
Right.
And you get together to coordinate activities and help our veterans
right.
in any way you can.
Yeah, information packages, see what we can do, yeah.
And you also propose some legislative items to the state legislature?
Yep. If things get bad, we do.
Are there any particular things we're working on this year? I understand we're trying to figure out or support or get the legislature to finish up the old soldiers' home.
Yeah, they're trying to. I hope they get it finished. There's a lot of them that could live there.
Need a little final funding just to pull that campus together, don't
yep,
they?
Yep.
So that sounds like a pretty good organization and quite a privilege to serve with those other leaders, isn't
it? Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's fun.
That's good. Now, Mel, you said you had 13 detachments and soon to be 14. Who's the newest one?
Well, the newest one, when I get it going, is going to be Duluth.
Duluth. So we're working on that.
Yep.
That's kind of a long way from Mankato, isn't it?
Yeah, well... We have to take, we want to get detachments. Well, I'd still like to find out about Worthington. I'd like to find out who mentioned it to me or get in touch with me or something from Worthington so I could get it going out west there, see?
So if any of the Marines are listening down in Worthington or know any of them down in Worthington, just go to Minnesota Military Radio and click on Contact Us and send us your name and contact information. We'll get it over to Mel.
Betcha.
Get down to southwestern Minnesota and get a detachment set up down there.
You bet.
Now, Mel, we were talking about you work on a program called Marines Helping Marines, which is if someone calls, you help them. And you've also, you get busy with the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon community programs and help them when you can.
Mm-hmm.
And then I understand, along with the Marine Corps Reserve, you're involved in Toys for Tots.
Oh, yes, heavy.
Can you tell me a little about that?
We have... Bernie Thompson and his wife, Sue, are the coordinators for Forrest G. James Detachment for the Toys for Tots, and they do a fabulous job. I don't know how they keep up with it, but they do.
So every fall you're involved in helping?
Oh, yeah. Well, I can. We pick up toys and distribute. This year they had, if I'm not mistaken, I think Bernie said something like 3,100 kids we service this year. A lot of Toys for Tots. So that's quite a bunch of kids.
That's a great program, Mel.
Oh, yes.
Well, I understand that it's said that the Marine Corps League is defined by their unity and that you're a pretty tight-knit group. And I understand that they've got a nickname for your wife when she accompanies you on all of these road trips you have to go on.
Yeah. They call her Ma.
All those Marines have another mom, huh?
Yeah.
So it's not just you doing service as the Commandant.
No. Oh, no.
It's Mrs. Commandant, too.
Yeah.
Does she like it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good. Once again, who's eligible to join the Marine Corps League, and where do they go to sign up?
All former Marines are eligible to join, plus your Fleet Marine Force Corpsman. They have to have been with the Fleet Marines to belong to the Marine Corps League. And now we can't forget the women. There's a lot of women out there that we'd like to get started in our detachments, and hopefully they'll come down and say something, and we can get them started to coming in. Well, and the youngsters.
Well, I'm sure you've seen that recently the Department of Defense opened up all the jobs to women.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, I think it's all right. I've advocated for years that anybody out of high school ought to put 2 years in boot camp, right out of high school. They'd learn to grow up in a quick hurry.
I'll bet they would. Well, I was reading here about the Marine Corps League. It says if someone could help, we do so. If we can't do it, we'll refer them to someone who can. We make sure that they get the help they need. And you added that the program is the best we can do for our fellow Marines who are out there hurt.
That's correct.
Are there Marines in Minnesota that need help?
Well, yes, there was. There was one. We had not only Marines, Army, and whoever, just service people. We'll help, not just Marines. We'll help whoever we can. They put in North Mankato here just a couple of months ago, a bunch of the Marines from our detachment went over and helped somebody put his house together. He couldn't do it, so they put it up together, and he's living in it now.
That's great work. It's good stuff when you get that done, isn't it?
You bet. You bet.
Well, we just got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts about the Marine Corps League and all those Marines out there that are eligible to join?
No, I sure wish they would, though. We could use a membership like anything else, and it's a good organization to belong to. It's camaraderie. It's not military oriented like you would in the service, you know.
Just veterans getting together to help other veterans.
That's right. That's all it is.
Mel, I want to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
You're quite welcome.
It was Mel Reuger, Commandant, Marine Corps League, Department of Minnesota, on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining us now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Sergeant Major, I'm sure everyone is aware by now, a few weeks ago, the direct combat exclusion rule for women in the military was rescinded. Can you talk about what that means?
Absolutely, Tom. The direct combat exclusion rule really prohibited the assignment of women into direct combat units below the brigade level, as well as some other special units like special operations and long-range reconnaissance, anywhere where a woman would be required to be physically located with direct combat units. But now, with the elimination of this rule, the Department of Defense plans to remove the gender-based barriers to service. Their goal is going to be to ensure that our missions are best met with the best qualified, most capable people, regardless of whatever gender they are.
So, Sergeant Major, what does that mean for the assignments of women within the Minnesota National Guard?
Well, Tom, as you know, the women in our organization have been performing really extremely well for many years, to include in combat. It's important to know with this rule being rescinded, it only affects our Army National Guard females because our Air National Guard doesn't currently have any positions that are closed to women, so it only affects the Army. This policy is going to ensure that our female soldiers have more career and promotion opportunities, and it also increases the talent pool across our whole organization. You know, even before the announcement rescinding the ground combat exclusion rule, the Minnesota Army National Guard agreed to take part in a pilot program, and it opened previously prohibited positions to our female soldiers. In fact, our 1st Brigade Combat Team is one of 9 National Guard brigades taking part in the pilot program across the country, and that allows women to be assigned to the headquarters of combat arms units.
So, Sergeant Major, what are the next steps in this process?
The Army's going to be validating performance standards for all the jobs in an effort to find some quantifiable standards that reflect basically knowledge, skills, and abilities required for each occupation. In essence, they're going to be creating some gender-neutral standards. In the meantime, though, the Minnesota National Guard is going to continue to implement Army instructions on this matter and proceed with the pilot program. We're really excited about that. In the end, we just want to ensure that all of our soldiers reach their highest potential and obtain equal recognition and enhance overall Army readiness.
Sergeant Major, sounds like a great change. I want to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tom.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, World War II veteran Ann Kornstrom, Mel Reuger from the Marine Corps League, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg, Commissioner Larry Shelladoe of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we find out what it takes to train for extreme winter warfare as soldiers from the Norwegian Army join us in studio to tell us about their unique 40-year partnership with Minnesota. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.